Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a good big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. What's going on, Connor?
Doing all right, Earl.
The gremlins have been working, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Working real hard today.
Well, you know, it happens so rarely, man. But it's certainly well worth the wait. Man, I have a wonderful show lined up this morning. And my first guest, Mr. John Johnson, is a lead researcher at Marquette Law School. What is the Luber Center? Lubar Center.
We're a small group of kind of like former journalists and political scientists and researchers who all work on public policy stuff. So we do a lot of programming. Our newest hire, we're very excited about, Derek Mosley.
Oh yeah,
chief judge of the Milwaukee Municipal Court. We managed to steal him away from the judiciary. He's going to come be our director here in the new year.
You know, when he first came to Milwaukee, I would have him on my radio show. He was a young guy. I think it was every other week or wow, weekly. He was such a powerful man.
Yeah,
he's a big physical presence,
mm-hmm,
but his heart is just unmatched.
And his mind, I mean, man, he's got so many ideas.
Oh, he really does.
Yeah.
And has been a great asset to people. And people who you would say, well, he's a judge, and judges' responsibility is to lock people up. Well, that's never been who the Honorable Judge Derek Mosley has been. He's always looked at anybody who's come before them as a person who a piece of clay,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who we can do something with and make their lives meaningful. So, I'm excited about his move, and I'm sure you guys are too.
Oh, we sure are. And, you know, he's still going to have time to officiate weddings, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, he'll do that, which is another one of his passions.
That's right.
So let's talk about Mr. Johnson. You and Mike Goucher, another, you know, legend, who's still at it after all these years. I remember as a young guy in the city watching Mike Goucher on Channel 4 and just being a man who went about his trade with compassion, with professionalism. And so the one thing you always knew about Mike Goucher was he took his profession seriously, right?
That's right. It's been interesting for me because I didn't grow up in Milwaukee. Grew up in rural Western Illinois, and so I didn't grow up seeing him on TV. I didn't really realize that he had that reputation when I became his coworker. But in working with him, I've been really impressed by the integrity he brings to the reporting process. It's been fun to learn from.
He is a legendary guy, very much beloved by those of us who've been around long enough to have seen him,
yeah,
and to have witnessed him and to have had dialogue and conversations with him. I remember when he left, many of us didn't want to see him go. But he had done his job and moved on to greener pastures, I guess it's safe to say. No, it's not safe to say, huh?
No, yeah, it was pretty nice, honestly.
but anyway, you and Mike put together an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel several weeks back now, and it's the competition for Milwaukee neighborhoods. Out-of-state landlords remain a concern. And so for people like me who've been in the city my entire life and remember the homes, man, you know, They were just owner occupied, and they were just immaculate. Milwaukee was one of the most beautiful cities in the entire nation because, you know, it was Milwaukee was the machine shop of the world. So we had industry here, and so you didn't need a college degree in order to be able to afford a middle class home. And so people from everywhere, Poland, Germany, Italy, you name it, came here and went to work in these main industries and were able to live these middle-class lifestyles and own these, at that time, immaculate-looking homes. And so, you know, that's why Milwaukee was so coveted. We actually were, I think, at the height of all of it, maybe the 12th largest city in the nation.
I think that's right. And one of the most densely populated.
Yes, and one of the most densely populated. And then now you look at it now, and it's, I don't know, 22, 24, 26, wherever it is, losing population.
That's right. In the 30s, I believe, actually.
Yeah. And so all of those things, you know, I don't remember it in the 30s, though. Okay. But I remember it in the 60s, in the 70s, and on. And I know what it was at that time. And so there are times now when I go through the neighborhood where I lived, the old A.L. Smith neighborhood, where I worked for 34 years, from 18 to 54, one job. I was one of those people who was able to, without a college degree, live a middle-class lifestyle because of that industry, afford a home, and all those things. And so when I go back to the old neighborhood, what you see is the remains of what was once a beautiful, beautiful neighborhood. Now, I said all those things because we're going to get into your article, and I think we needed to kind of lay a framework on just what has occurred, what has happened after that wonderful time, nostalgic time that I'm talking about. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is Mr. John Johnson, and we got a lot to talk about. We'll be right back. Sleep. I kept hearing Tower of Power. And so I came in this morning, and Cutter and I talked about it. And for those of you who have never heard Tower of Power, today's show's music is all going to be Tower of Power. So welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. John Johnson. And how can we short it? Just say with Mark Hedlow? With Mark Hedlow. So anyway, so you and Mike Gouche wrote this article about the home ownership and the homes in the Milwaukee area, especially those in the central city, and a phenomenon that is not, I guess, is not just taking place here. I read some other, this is happening all over the country. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so what we found is since 2018, owner occupancy has gone up in the city, which is new. It had been falling every year beginning around 2006. The housing crisis, we talk about like it ended sometime around 2012 or something nationally. In Milwaukee, it didn't. It kept going the whole decade. But since 2018, we've added about 3,000 owner-occupiers in the city of Milwaukee, which is about 2% of the houses. That might not sound like a lot. It's not a whole lot, but most houses don't sell in any given year, so that's real change. But at the same time, we've seen this big increase in the number of houses that are owned by these investors who are located outside of Wisconsin, and increasingly these three specific private equity-backed companies.
So before you go any further, let me ask you if there's a correlation between all the houses that were available with the 2008 crash. Mm-hmm. Where so many people lost their homes, especially in central cities.
Absolutely. But it's a little bit, there's a couple steps involved. So I'll walk you through that if you're interested.
Yes, sir.
So there's this, as you say, this huge burst of foreclosures and then like pre-foreclosures. You know, if people didn't get foreclosed on directly, they would sell their house desperately to, you know, somebody who had cash ahead of time. And those are, you know, the thousands and thousands of houses in Milwaukee. And at that time, people who had cash recognized that they could buy houses for so, so cheap, huge discounts. So you see people in the suburbs, sometimes people in Milwaukee, but especially people in the suburbs, and then these people from out of state. But at the time, it was not really large companies from out of state. It was these individual investors from places like California and Texas and Florida. I call them single-digit millionaires, people who live out there, they got a nice house, and they think, wow, I can buy a house for $30,000 in Milwaukee. And I can charge $750 a month in rent. Do the math on that. That's pretty profitable. And so you can find web forums and podcasts and all these places where you got people from these other states talking about how much money you can make being a landlord in Milwaukee. And so those were the out-of-state investors we saw buying up lots of houses in the early and mid-2010s. There, at the same time, nationally, there's this new phenomenon of private equity-backed real estate investment where you had these huge companies, just a handful of them. The biggest is called Invitation Homes, and it was started by this private equity hedge fund called BlackRock. And they started buying thousands of houses out of foreclosure at sheriff sales and things like that, specifically in Atlanta. Atlanta and some places in some cities in Phoenix and Texas. So when they would, even though they had thousands of houses, they were only in a few cities because their business model is buy a ton of houses close to each other, and then you achieve that economy of scale that lets you really make serious money. And today, I believe Invitation Homes owns around 80,000 houses. They're pretty famous. You can read articles about them in the Washington Post and, you know, all the kind of national news places. But those companies who pioneered what they call the SFR, or single family rental business model, they never came to the Rust Belt at that time because they wanted metro areas that were growing, which they thought would drive up the value of their properties. And from what I've read, they wanted post-1977 housing stock because they didn't want to deal with lead paint. And they thought, you know, we'll just go to the Sun Belt where things are growing and the houses are newer and the winters are not as bad. And they totally ignored the Rust Belt. They didn't come to post-industrial cities like you were describing at all. Instead, we had these individual people who were buying up lots of houses here. Some real characters that we found in some of our research and reporting. I worked with Carrie Spivak at the paper on some of this as well. And but that has changed in the last really 3 or 4 years. You've had, in Milwaukee's case, 3 private equity firms, new ones, that realized, you know what, you can actually make a killing doing this in the Rust Belt, even though the even though the houses are old, there's a ton of lead paint, even though the population is declining, the rents are still quite high relative to the home values. So if you can buy these houses in cash, do minimal repairs, you can make tons of money.
You know, so it's you mentioned this happening in different parts of the country. Minorities targeted?
Yes. Yeah,
for the most part, in the different parts of the country as well as Milwaukee.
Yeah, especially with in cities, post-industrial cities like Milwaukee, we see this really happening in majority black neighborhoods, specifically less so in the Latino neighborhoods.
So hold that thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is Mr. John Johnson. We'll be right back. At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And it's, you know, I really am excited about the conversation I'm having with my guest, Mr. John Johnson, as he chronicles, you know, some of what has happened in the city of Milwaukee. And in this article that he wrote, along with Mike Goucher, you can find it in the November 10th edition of the Milwaukee Journal. It is quite an extensive article that covers, you know, just what has happened in the city of Milwaukee and other places across the nation. People oftentimes wonder and ask questions about, well, why is Milwaukee in the condition that it's in? You know, if you don't have any equity, if you live in neighborhoods that don't have home ownership, it's pretty clear that transience is not a good recipe for building strong communities. And so Mr. John Johnson has explained, along with Mike Goucher, in depth about some of the problems that exist in the city of Milwaukee. You know, John, we were talking about what has happened. And, you know, initially I was talking about the fact that so many people have left, and now you say that there's a renaissance, kind of a renaissance, 3,000 houses that are now owned, occupied by people of color, I think is a good thing, because it had gone down so far that I didn't see, to be quite frank with you, a lot of hope for it coming back, because industry is gone. And, you know, in order to own a house today, you know, in this climate, you've got to have a decent job, a middle-class job. When you live in a society like the one today where 50% of the people, doesn't matter what color, are struggling economically, home ownership and the middle class and the American dream is kind of out of reach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a strength of Milwaukee, to be honest, is that it's still a place where, I think a strength of Milwaukee is that it's still a place where somebody with a modest middle class job, a regular job, works at a factory, maybe their spouse is a school teacher or bus driver or something like that, they can buy a house.
Yeah.
They still can. I got two of them. Yes. I got all these friends. I mean, that's hard work. That's working hard, and it used to be easier, but I got all these friends who live in places where, you know, the tech industry has gone crazy or whatever.
Right.
The home values are just through the roof, and they have no chance of ever buying a house. And Milwaukee's a place where more people can than in the past. And in Milwaukee, it's a really good deal. Like, if you're renting an $80,000 house, you're almost certainly paying hundreds of dollars more per month than your mortgage would be. And so even when you think about the extra expenses that an owner has, you know, you got to save for the maintenance, you got to replace the fridge when it breaks, that kind of thing. Even when you factor those things in, for a lot of people, owning is cheaper on a monthly basis than renting is. And that's not even thinking about the equity you build, which is so important for somebody's family.
So these people who have come in and can really outbid the average person on a house, is there a shortage of houses in the Milwaukee area?
And I want to talk about that because it's such an important point that they are causing a shortage of these naturally affordable houses, but they aren't doing it by paying more. They actually pay a little bit less than owner-occupiers would when they buy these houses, but the big buyers buy package deals. They buy out entire portfolios of smaller landlords all for cash. And so by buying 4, 5, 6, sometimes 20 or more houses in one transaction, they keep those houses from being listed on MLS. So if you, the would-be home buyer, you never even have the opportunity to put in an offer on this house. And from what we can tell, when houses are sold this way in these package deals, the individual price of each house is actually a little bit less than what they would go for on the open market, but it's attractive to, you know, your small landlord who's getting out of the game because they can get rid of all their houses just in one sale. There's less paperwork. It's all cash. It closes very quickly. And so for those reasons, they're willing to take a little bit of a discount just to get rid of the houses more easily. And so that's something we've seen just sort of spike in the last few years, is the number of houses being sold in these off-market whole portfolio sales.
So when you, and I hadn't given that much thought, but I knew guys who owned 4, 5, 6 houses, and they bought them 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly in some neighborhoods and areas, the houses kind of lost value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to be able to get out and sell it like that, the person's not thinking of any damage he's causing. He's just thinking, hey, it's time to go.
I don't blame the people doing that. They're taking the sort of rational choice for them. But it is a problem because it precludes, you know, the would-be home buyer in that neighborhood from even having a shot. And not because they can't afford to pay as much, but because they don't have the cash lying around to buy 6 houses at one time. So I'm excited about this acquisition fund that this group, Axe Housing, has started.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah, it's a clever idea. So Axe Housing has been around a long time. It got started, I think, in the 90s by a group of churches. It's now just a nonprofit. It's not affiliated with any specific church. And they help people buy houses. They are a one-stop shop. They do home buyer counseling. Sometimes they even lend money. They'll list houses. They help the city sell a lot of the tax foreclosed properties to owner-occupiers. And they have a renovation coach who helps the people who buy these old houses figure out what they need to hire a contractor for to do right away. And they help them find good contractors, which can be hard, as I have learned as a recent home buyer myself. And so Axe Housing did a lot of work in the early 2010s when houses were super, super cheap. You know, there were $20,000 houses right in the city that needed $15,000 of work. But still, you know, we're talking $35,000, right, $40,000 for a house in total. And one of the really important things they did for people is help provide the financial product, the loan that would actually let you do that. Because you walk into a bank and say, I want to get a 20-year mortgage for a $20,000 house that needs $15,000 of work.
Not going to happen.
They don't have that loan for you, even if on paper you're like, yeah, that monthly payment makes a lot of sense for me. So they would make those loans. They would help people get into those kinds of properties. And they grew a lot over the decade because there was so much demand for that kind of service. But what they're running into now, they tell me, is that there are fewer houses in the affordable range coming onto the market. And they were trying to figure out what was going on, and they found that those houses are increasingly being sold in these package offerings. So the value of each individual house is not going up that much, but the houses are being bundled together and being sold for $400,000 for five houses or something like that.
So short term, like right this moment, it might not be a crisis, but long term, if this is allowed to continue, it then becomes a crisis.
Especially because as more and more houses are owned by these large landlords, if and when those large landlords decide to sell, they will probably do it in large portfolio sales to other large landlords. So I don't want to say it permanently removes the houses from the possible owner-occupied universe, but it feels like that sometimes.
So, but and what people should take from this is what I took from it, and that's the fact that how do you then build neighborhoods? Right? I mean, the only way you really build neighborhoods and save neighborhoods is owner-occupied.
And I don't want to say renters are all bad. I've been a renter, you know, through my 20s. But I didn't stick around in any neighborhood I was in. I think I was a good neighbor while I was there. But I wasn't. I tried to be. But I moved pretty quickly.
Right.
And so I didn't have time to really develop those connections.
Well, I mean, that's clearly with most of us. When they talk about putting down roots, that's what they mean. Mm-hmm. And that means where I am and where I live and where I've lived for the last 25 years.
Right.
That's my neighborhood.
Right.
Right. I know the people there. Everything about it matters to me. And so that's how you build stability. But you can't build stability if somebody buys up all of the properties, and then they're going to rent
mm-hmm.
to people. I'm not, again, I agree with you that everybody who rents is not bad, but you know, like you, most of us when we start out, that's what we do, we rent, and so we don't leave behind our roots.
Mm-hmm.
That only happens after, you know, we've made commitments to being somewhere. And I talk to a lot of young people who would like to own homes. Let's be honest, too. A lot of this has had to do with the fact that it was always hard to get people of color had trouble getting loans,
mm-hmm.
bank loans.
Right.
Even when we had good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're aware of that. But there was discriminatory practices
right.
that didn't allow people in the city of Milwaukee to even when they could be able to get a loan to purchase homes. And part of that, I think, still might be in effect now.
Well,
so I mean, if not, this is what I hear from people.
Well, so to kind of a, you know, it's less explicit now,
right.
But an example, I think, of what you're talking about. So in the early and mid-2010s, there were just oodles of houses in Milwaukee for sale for
right.
less than $50,000. But I am told that most banks have a minimum mortgage that they're willing to make that'll be like $50,000 to $70,000. And they won't even write a mortgage for less than that. Even if, you know, everything right. else makes sense on paper, the monthly payment, the person's finances and all that. So in that sense, they're sort of they were just eliminating many, many houses in majority black neighborhoods from you even having the opportunity to get a mortgage for, which has the effect of keeping people in those neighborhoods from getting a loan.
So how did then the city wind up with so many properties? People just walked away, I guess.
Tax foreclosures. Yeah, you don't pay your taxes for, I forget, 3 years in a row or something, and the city takes it. Yeah.
And so the city has been overrun, so to speak, with a lot of those properties that are in ill repair.
Yeah.
And they're selling those, I guess, in bunches.
They, you know, I'm going to defend the city here. I think they've done the best job they could trying to sell those to owner occupiers. They would initially list them just for owner occupiers to put in offers on, and they would try to come up with creative financing to help with that. And they were successful to a pretty large degree, definitely way more than if they had sold those at auction. But then they were left with some houses that were in such disrepair that they weren't able to find an owner-occupier to come in and be like, yeah, I'll invest needed to bring this back. And some of those they've just sort of had to sell
torn
to
down.
Who torn down or just sell to whoever will take them. But they really did try, I think, to make those tax foreclosures have a good outcome.
No, listen, I'm not blaming the city, because if you've been to other cities, Milwaukee's housing stock is pretty good. I mean,
I would say,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, you don't see, you know, real slums in the city of Milwaukee. They've done a great job of replacing houses that they've torn down. Listen, we've got to go to a break. Mr. John Johnson is here. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. This is something that I think explains a lot of different things. I'm glad you're here. We'll be right back.
You're my sweet foxy pink, hey. And you know I love you. But listen. To the nightclub.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. My guest is Mr. John Johnson. He co-wrote an article in the competition for Milwaukee's neighborhoods. Out-of-state landlords remain a concern. So people may ask you, why are you opposed to people owning, these different owning these homes and buying these homes? They're better. It's best that somebody is doing that than leaving them. I guess free.
I know what you mean. You know, it's the free market, people say at work. So you know what's the issue, but I think. The story that these investors often tell is misleading. So they'll say things like, well, no one else would buy these houses if we would, or, we're just providing rentals that people need. And it's just manifestly untrue if you look at the market dynamics in these neighborhoods that no one else would buy these houses. There's very strong demand by owner-occupiers, people who want to be owner-occupiers, for houses in the $80,000 to $120,000 range that many of these companies are operating in Milwaukee. Many people want to buy those houses, and these companies are specifically buying these houses in a way that keeps them from being listed on the open market for these people to put an offer on.
So it's safe to say new families starting out, that's where they want to be.
That's who we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, first homes.
Yes.
And you certainly don't want to step out in your first home and spend $250,000 in your first home unless you're John Johnson. come on. So, yeah, you do kind of put people behind the eight ball when they start out in their first homes, and they can't afford to get that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, And even if the bank is willing to give you that loan, is it a good financial situation for you? It's much better for people to be able to afford these homes. And also, when you're renting a house for $100,000, that is worth $100,000, your rent is more than your housing expenses would be as an owner-occupier, right, even when you factor in saving for maintenance and those kinds of things in most cases.
So when you started unraveling this, there probably was more and more and more and more layers to it, right?
It started as a pretty simple question where my colleague Mike was writing an article at the time about the end of the residency requirement for city employees in Milwaukee. And he asked me, is there any way we can figure out what happened to owner occupancy rates in the neighborhoods that city employees left? And I was like, well, I guess we could use the data from the tax assessor. You know, you compare where the mailing address for the property taxes to the address of the house, and that's a pretty good measure of if it's owner occupied or not. So I was working through that data, and I was like, why are there all these mailing addresses in California? What is going on here? And in Texas as well. And so I started looking at the names of these LLCs and realizing that some of these LLCs were actually the same LLC, you know, the same person connected to each other, and just almost detective work at that point, pulling this stuff together to figure out what was happening.
So these things are legal. The question becomes, just because things are legal, does it mean that they're right? Let's go to Ron from Milwaukee. Hey, good morning, Ron. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I've had some experience with this as a homeowner. When I was starting out as a young career single guy, I bought a duplex in Sherman Park, and the rent from the upper flat helped me pay the mortgage. And even though I had a low income as a young man, I was able to make that swing, and interest rates were okay at that time. But now that I'm retired and I've moved to a different housing, and I've been an absentee landlord, a good one, but nevertheless, it's time for me to sell that property. And I've had any number of calls from neighbors who rent, who would like to buy, and even some of my own renters who would like to buy the property, and they don't know where to go. I mean, they're like me, except things are harder now, as you indicate. And so I sent them to WEDA, which is the state housing authority, which offers, you know, underwrites low interest loans for first time home buyers. And some churches work with people on this, but it's very hard for both the seller, and I don't want to sell to one of these, you know, packagers who are just going to flip the house. So it's a problem for everybody, but I see some hope on the horizon. I just hope that people can come up with enough investment capital, that is, community organizations with enough investment capital that they can start to underwrite some of these loans right in the neighborhood.
Well, you know, Ron, you clearly echoed the sentiments that I was talking about earlier, where you put down those roots in the Sherman Park neighborhood, and you still have neighbors who are still there, and it's still, you know, nostalgic, and you still don't want to see that neighborhood, you know, decline. You don't want to be one of the people who helps it decline because so many people are still there.
And I took care of the house, and I continue to take care of it, and it's a lovely little Milwaukee bungalow, you know, about almost 100 years old now. And it comes with a little bit of problems, you know, the kind of maintenance you have on a century-old house.
Right.
But people who rent it or visit it or see it on the street, they'll pull up to me in the alley when I'm getting into my car and say, hey, that's a great house. Is that house for sale? And I say, well, sort of. I'm trying to figure out how to make something work for me and for buyers. Another thing is, I don't want to go through a regular broker because you run right into the big problem there. Direct selling is good, but that's very complicated and very, you know, you're doing FSBO, for sale by owner, and that's hard. So, but if people can get together that down payment, and I think WEDA used to be a good source. I actually worked there for a few years, and I hope they are back in that market. For a long time, they dropped out of that market. I don't know what they're doing now, but
hey,
I
Ron,
sure hope that.
Thank you very much for the call, man. Thank you for listening. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.